The good. The bad. The ugly.
Welcome to Sustain Nutrition's podcast, Chewing the Fat, where Joe and James will be discussing all things good, bad and ugly regarding training and nutrition. So pull up your pants, put your best foot forward and get ready for some serious oral pleasure. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Joe and James.
Sustain Nutrition, Chewing the Fat podcast episode 115. Today we are joined by Gary Allman, who's going to talk to us about sleep performance. Gary's a sleep performance coach specializing in sleep optimization for high performing entrepreneurs and professional sportsmen. So it's a really interesting chat, lots of gems to take away from there, the importance of sleep, how it affects you, your fat loss and your diet and your decision making, and tons of important content that you can take away and start applying now. So enjoy the podcast. So we're joined today by sleep performance coach Gary Allman, who's very gratefully given up some time for us. He's going to tell it. Well, make sure no one drops off. Listen to my ranting. but yes, mate, thank you very much for joining us. Can you tell us a bit about what you do, who you work with, kind of how you got into it? Introduce yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, James. It's great to be here. I specialize in sleep coaching holistically, naturally, and productivity as well, for overall health and performance and longevity in a sense as well. So I work with entrepreneurs. I've worked with a couple of professional sportsmen as well. We're currently working with coaches and fit pros as well for their own clients. So we're actually moving into that industry now to help personal trainers with their own clients when it comes to results in sleep. My own background is in mindset predominantly, and I've kind of transitioned into sleep because it's a huge aspect of performance, and that's what I was initially not privy to. Obviously, when it comes to performance, I wasn't really looking at sleep. I was just looking at mindset and other aspects, but sleep is a huge game changer for a lot of people. So many people are sleep deprived. Unfortunately, in the society we live in all seriousness, there's no holistic solution or very little on the market that's actually going to help people long-term when it comes to sleep problems. It all seems to be quick fixes with pills and potions and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, we're here to change that, and we're here to make a big impact when it comes to holistic, healthy sleep.
Right. I love it, because I know it is, like you said, it's a massive issue for a lot of people. And I think, you know, from our, not background, but with people that we work with, you know, there's people struggling to make better food choices. And I think a lot of times people think with tiredness, it's just more of a kind of a psychological thing. Like, I want to eat some carbs. I want to reach for these kind of quick energy fixes. But can you tell us a little bit more of kind of physically what's going on when people are, I suppose, kind of sleep deprived?
Yeah, a lot of the time our natural internal clock is out of sync. So we have what we call our circadian rhythm, which is our natural biological clock. Everything on the planet, living or even not living, like trees and plants, have a natural rhythm. You know, if you look out the window now in the UK, the trees don't have leaves on. It's their cycle, their yearly cycle. And human beings are no different, although our cycle is day to day. So we have our sleep-wake cycle. We have our energy cycle. We have our focus cycle. Some people are more alert in the morning. Some people are more alert in the afternoon. But most people who experience poor sleep will be sleepy at irregular times. They'll have afternoon slumps, and then they'll reach for energy drinks, like you say. And that just throws the rhythm off more because it's not giving the body a chance to actually do what it needs to do. So there's some warning signs. If you're in a state of dysfunction, you're going to be feeling sleepy at irregular times. It's not going to be the same time every day as it should be.
So what are the kind of key offenders that you see for people that are interrupting their kind of sleep patterns or the circadian rhythms?
Yeah, I think the common thing is just not going to bed at the same time. Right. Some people will push past tiredness and think, oh, it's only 9 o'clock. I won't go to bed yet, even though they feel tired. And then they'll stay up till 10:30, 11:00, sometimes even midnight, and watching TV or out partying or whatever, just saying yes to things that don't need their energy and making too many commitments and not putting themselves first. So if there's an erratic behavior in that sense in regards to time, it's obviously going to cause repercussions down the line because there's no consistency. The body loves consistency, whether that's eating at the same time or working out at the same time. And if we're sleeping at the same time or near enough the same time every day, our body's going to be able to put the processes in place it needs to have a really good shot at getting good sleep every night. Otherwise, it's just guessing when we're actually going to go to bed and when it needs to start the work in order to release the hormones and get the body to relax at a certain time.
So I know you kind of mentioned a couple of things like feeling tired at different times of the day, but what would be the kind of key indicators if someone was to, I suppose, kind of, we all love a bit of self-diagnosis these days, but someone was to kind of diagnose themselves as, you know, being kind of sleep deprived or having dysfunctional sleep, what would be kind of key indicators for that for you?
I think being sleep deprived would just be feeling foggy and not mentally clear day to day. That's a big warning sign. You shouldn't have to rely on substances or stimulants to get you through the day. And you go back thousands of years, there was no such thing as caffeine. Human beings just used to get up and get on with their day. We used to sleep around the sun. You know, that was our circadian rhythm. But nowadays we have distractions, we have social commitments, we have more stress in our life, all sorts of things. And we do push past those barriers in order to do more and make the most of our day, but at the expense of our sleep. So I think if we're going into that pattern consistently, we're going to experience those times where we just don't feel ourselves. We just feel off. We think maybe we've not had enough caffeine in the day, or maybe we've just not exercised. So maybe we'll go to the gym and get some energy. Reality is we need to rest, we need to recover, and to get our body back to a baseline that's healthy before we even push further on. But people don't like to sleep. A lot of people don't like to sleep because they think it's a waste of time. I know a lot of guys who, and women as well, who just think, oh, I haven't got time to sleep. I can get 5 or 6 hours a night instead of 8 or 9 and I'll be okay. So that kind of behavior, that mindset obviously isn't healthy. And it does just eat into the belief that sleep is the first thing to go when we become busy. But it reinforces that mindset.
I'm smiling away because I don't say I have a lot of caffeine, but what I do have is a 2.5-year-old who doesn't like to sleep. Like, I absolutely love sleep, but he loves to wake up kind of 3, 4, 5 times a night. So it's really broken. So, yeah, so I do lean on coffee quite a bit and probably train when I shouldn't. So what kind of negative impact can that have on health? You know, if people are long-term just kind of burning the candle at both ends and, you know, kind of getting themselves into this sleep deprived state, what kind of negative impact will that have on people's, I suppose, kind of health?
Yeah, I mean, the negative impacts will affect different people in different ways. But the long and short of it is you're going to gain weight. You're going to be eating crap food because your body needs energy. So you're going to seek out carbs and high energy, high processed food to give you that hit quickly. And you're going to do this without even knowing about it, guys. You may think, well, I don't do that. Well, reality is your subconscious mind will be doing it for you because that's a part of the brain that doesn't need much energy compared to the frontal lobe, which is there for creative thinking and enforcing new habits. So if you're running on a sleep deprived brain, you're just running on autopilot. It's like when you're driving and you've been driving for ages and all of a sudden you're at your destination, you forget how you got there. You've just been doing it. You haven't been consciously thinking about it. And that's the same with our eating habits. We don't always go for the best option because it requires more effort. So we'll go for the cheaper, convenient option, which is to eat fast food or it's to just make something quick that isn't best for us. So as a result of that, the more sleep deprived we are, the higher our risk of unhealthy weight gain and returns to obesity. And also we have a drive with our hunger hormones to actually eat more food anyway. So we can have our 3 square meals a day and we can actually have an increase in the hunger hormones, ghrelin and leptin, which are going to tell us that even if we've had our caloric intake for the day, we're still going to need more food because we're sleep deprived. So those hormones are going to be out of balance. So you can see now the correlation between weight gain and sleep deprivation. And just things like bad skin, bags under the eyes, like short-term memory loss is affected. You know, if our REM sleep is suffering, which is where we consolidate our memories and form new ones, we'll forget things like, where do we put our car keys? Or what are we going to say in that email? Or why did we go upstairs? You know, people go upstairs and think, why did I come upstairs? That can be a sign of sleep deprivation. All joking aside, it's more common than you think it is. And it can be a sign of poor sleep.
I feel like you're describing me there. You're like looking at me and going like, bags under his eyes, bad skin, forgetful. Like, oh,
your skin is flawless, James.
It's filler. I forgot. You see, now I'm going to say I forgot what I was going to say now. But no, that does fall back into what I said at the start. When people feel like, oh, when I'm tired, I make poor choices, and they think it's just like a psychological, but there are physical things going on. Like you said, you know, like people's insulin sensitivity is down. You know, the blood sugar drops. If you're up for a longer period of time, then you're going to need more calories. Your body is going to be doing this. Like I said, you know, tiredness does weaken resolve. So, what are your kind of opinions or knowledge, I suppose, say, on things like blue lights? So people using their phones, you know, tablets, devices and stuff before bed, because I know, or I'm aware that that can affect people's circadian rhythm and stuff, because it kind of mimics sunlight. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. The brain doesn't distinguish between an electronic device and the sun. It only distinguishes the pigmentation it's actually facing at that time. So to put the science into it, in the eye, in the retina of the eye where the color is, there's light-sensing proteins called melanopsin. And these are linked to the brain, the master clock in the brain, which is the circadian rhythm, basically, and turns on and off depending on what we're doing during the day or what time of day it is. So when the light-sensing proteins in the eye pick up on the pigmentation, on the light spectrum, because obviously, as we know, we have colors of the rainbow is the light spectrum. Blue light is the strongest, which is emitted from these devices, and that will suppress melatonin if we're looking at it late at night. And it will also stimulate hormones that are awake, so such as adrenaline and cortisol. So if we are experiencing them in the morning, that's fantastic because we need to be up, we need to be alert. If we experience them in the evening, we're going to lie in bed wide awake and not know why, because we won't feel awake. We'll feel physically tired. But because our brain is stimulated by the blue light pigmentation, we're going to feel alert and we're not going to be able to drift off. And then in turn, that can cause anxiety around sleep, without us knowing how our actual devices and our tablets are affecting us.
Because it is so common to see people, you know, on their phones in bed, on their iPads, watching TV, watching laptops and stuff like that. And like you said, yeah, you know, there's a big difference. Maybe we could touch upon it now, the difference between kind of sleep quantity versus sleep quality.
Mm. Yeah, sleep quality is huge. I mean,
how would you describe sleep quality to someone that?
Okay, so sleep quality is basically boils down to your sleep cycles. So if you're getting a consistent 4 or 5 cycles per night, you're getting between 6 and 7.5 hours of good quality sleep, which 6 hours is never ideal. But for someone who's sleep deprived, we don't want to be chasing 8 or 9 hours straight off the bat, because it's just going to build anxiety when they don't achieve it. But people form an attachment to numbers in regards to sleep, how long they spend in bed, their duration, when in reality, what we need to look at is how we can improve the sleep quality, such as what we've talked about, cutting out blue light. That's a massive win. That's going to stimulate the body and the brain. So that will aid better REM sleep, because the brain won't be alert and the brain will actually be able to rest and do what it needs to do. So the REM sleep will be better. So we'll wake up, we'll feel mentally sharper. And then basic things like not eating too late, that will improve sleep quality. If we're eating high sugar, high processed, high carb food, 1 hour or 2 hours before bed, our blood sugar is going to be jacked up. And then whilst we're asleep, when that blood sugar starts to come down again, we're going to be waking up more. We're going to have more antagonists to our sleep, because the body's leveling itself out and balancing the blood sugar whilst we sleep. So those two things there are massive influences on sleep quality. And if we're not addressing these things, plus a load of other things on top of that, then there's no point chasing a magic number of hours for sleep, because anyone can sleep for a duration of time but not get the right quality sleep the body needs. You can spend 8 hours in bed and think you get 8 hours of sleep. Reality is you probably got 5.5, spent 2 hours awake and 30 minutes wide awake or drifting off to sleep. And that's the difference.
So let's talk about the big one, the elephant in the room, alcohol. So lots of people will, I know this is going to upset some people, lots of people go like, oh, I have to have a glass of wine or I have this and it helps me get to sleep. But doesn't that just ruin their sleep quality?
So yeah, just sedate sleep. Yeah.
Going to say kind of fall into what you said, like people will fall asleep, but the sleep that they get is not good quality. As in, you know, they're not dropping into REM sleep and they're not getting what they're being. Like, yeah, maybe you can elaborate on that slightly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it seems to be a fashionable thing for people to kind of de-stress from the day, get in and have a bottle of wine or, you know, maybe a glass of whiskey if it's a really stressful day. So people joke, they say, oh, I need a stiff drink, you know, take the edge off and all that stuff. It's embedded in society. I used to be in that position years ago when I was in my corporate job. I used to have crazy stress, get home, you know, have a beer, chill out. But the reality is it does affect all stages of sleep. Alcohol is a sedative, and it doesn't induce good brainwave activity. So in order to have good sleep, we need good brainwave activity, and alcohol just affects that. Plus alcohol has sugar in, so it will stimulate your blood sugar and raises your blood sugar. So yes, anyone who is has been out on the lash and drinking heavily will be able to go to sleep like that. Their sleep latency will be 1 or 2 minutes. As soon as they get in bed, their head hits the pillow. But there is no one listening to this call right now that can wake up after they've been on a night out and tell me they felt good in the morning, even if they weren't that drunk when they got home. Even if they had, say, 4 beers and they felt a little bit merry and they're okay, I guarantee you they wake up in the morning, they don't feel good, but they slept really fast. And that's the difference. People will tell themselves that story because it's like a safety blanket, if you like. And they can just form an attachment to it and think, oh, I can sleep well when I have a glass of wine. But it just puts them in a vicious cycle.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a long time, but before, when you've gone out and you've had a skinful and you're like, oh my God, I've slept for 10 hours and I'm still absolutely knackered, because it just absolutely, yeah, wrecks it. So looking at, say, like caffeine, what's the kind of cutoff period? I mean, again, I'll use myself as an example. You can pull it apart if you want. I try and have my last kind of coffee or caffeinated drink around 2 o'clock. I normally go to bed about 9, because I've got an hour between him going down and then me going down and then trying to get a couple of hours before he wakes up again. But yeah, okay. I know like caffeine's half-life is around kind of 4 to 6 hours. So I try and get it out of my system anything later than that. Because my mom and dad are a great example. They'll have coffee after dinner and then go to sleep. I'm like, you might fall asleep, but this is not going to be the best sleep for you. But yeah. What are your thoughts on when to cut caffeine?
The half-life of caffeine does vary on the source of caffeine as well. I mean, 4 to 6 hours can be the minimum. It can be 6 to 8 hours as well. Depends on where it comes from. But 2 p.m. is pretty good. I mean, I would say 8 hours really minimum, personally. So for you, maybe 1 p.m. But I mean, if the half-life is 4 to 6 hours, obviously we're allowing 8 hours between the last cup. It gives us a good chance. I mean, we're probably still going to have some caffeine in our system, but it's not going to be enough to completely wreck our sleep quality. But if we're having caffeine past 2 and then we're not leaving 8 hours, or we're having a numerous amount of cups during the day, and even if we do cut it off at 2, obviously we've all got that caffeine. We've got that caffeine in our system, all stimulating every part of the body. It's going to drastically affect sleep quality. And for people listening, like your parents, James, who say, I can have a cup of coffee and I'll be fine, your caffeine sensitivity is probably very low.
Yeah.
But I would question why you're having caffeine at that time anyway, because surely you wouldn't need it if you were sleeping well. So there is that side of the coin as well, where people say, oh, I'm fine, I can go to sleep and I can drink coffee at 11 p.m. But they're drinking 8 cups a day. So it's like, okay, well, you need a stimulant because your sleep is wrecked, because the body isn't doing what it needs to do because it has so much caffeine it's trying to flush out. And I can talk about the science and more of that if you want, because caffeine's such a big thing.
Yeah, go for it. Give us a bit.
Yeah, okay. So caffeine, on a molecular structure, there's a chemical in the body called adenosine. Okay, now adenosine builds our urge to sleep. So we have our circadian rhythm, which is the timing of our sleep. And we have the urge to sleep, where we feel sleepy and we think, man, I'm knackered. That's driven by a chemical called adenosine, which is released from our movement in the day, even like things like breathing, talking as I am now, all exert energy and breakdown of this chemical in the body. And what this chemical adenosine does is it binds to the receptors in the brain to tell us to feel sleepy throughout the day. Very, very gradual buildup. So come like 8, 9 o'clock, we start to feel tired and fatigued, ready for bed at 10 or 11 or vice versa. Now, caffeine on a molecular structure, just going back to that for a second, is just out by one molecule when it comes to adenosine. So caffeine will bind to the same receptors in the brain that adenosine does. And caffeine acts as a barrier for adenosine. So adenosine is knocking on the door, building up, building up, building up, like a blockage in a pipe. And it can't get in because you've got caffeine in stimulating your brain, stimulating your focus. But when that caffeine wears off, the adenosine will rush in, and people who rely on caffeine will suddenly experience a real dip in energy, a massive crash, because the caffeine's worn off, the adenosine's taken over. It's like someone's just burst a dam. Now, what they'll do then is they'll reach for another cup of coffee, and so on and so forth. The cycle continues. The adenosine gets blocked. They start to feel sleepy at irregular times. So what we need to do in order to fight that is, like you said, James, have a cutoff point. And we can also delay the caffeine in the morning as well. Now, people are probably going to fall off the chair listening to this, thinking, how can I delay my caffeine? I need it in the morning. But if you delay it for 90 minutes, you're going to let your hormones in the morning do their thing, actually going to wake you up properly. And then the caffeine has a clear path. Once those hormones have stopped working, the caffeine has a clear path to wake you up. If you take the caffeine first thing alongside the hormones, cortisol and adrenaline in the morning, waking you up, stimulating your brain, they have no effect. The caffeine will have a competition with those two hormones and they'll just wear off together. And you'll just then think, oh, I'm not awake yet. The caffeine hasn't worked. I need another cup. Reality is, if you delayed it, let the hormones do their thing, you would wake up naturally because that's what your body does. Then when they wear off after around 90 minutes or 2 hours, you can have your caffeine. And for those of you thinking, I wake up at 7, I can't go until 8:30 to have my first cup. If you keep a glass of water by your bed and you drink that first, then you go and shower, then you get dressed. If you're a woman, you do your makeup, do your hair. If you're a man, you know, do whatever you need to do. By the time you get downstairs, 45 minutes or an hour has already passed. And you'd only then have to wait another 30 minutes or 45 minutes to have your caffeine. So the delay really isn't that bad as you think. And then I guarantee you, once you allow your body to level out and do what it needs to do, you'll feel a lot better in the morning because it's just what your body wants to do. It's the natural biological process of your body.
That's very interesting. That's something I'll definitely do because I'm a bit more of a kind of get up, kettle on, put the coffee in the cafetiere and kind of, you know, maybe half an hour or something. But yeah, I'll definitely delay that a little bit more. Yeah, very interesting. So what would be kind of, what would be a nighttime routine that you would recommend for people or for your clients? What are the kind of golden rules?
Yeah, good question, mate. I mean, we try and keep it as simple as possible. Every evening routine someone does is completely tailored to them. Your situation is completely different to my situation. I don't have kids, so I'm not going to suggest a generic routine because it just doesn't work. But I like to think, I like to do probably two or three main things. Now, number one is to stop eating 3 or 4 hours before bed. That's the number one thing. If you can do that, then that's really going to help your sleep, help your digestive system shut down and help the core temperature drop. Because when we eat food, our core temperature raises slightly because all the blood is in the stomach and the majority is digesting the food. So that's a rule. I would set a dinner time, then I would set your bedtime 3 or 4 hours later. I would also invest either in some really high quality blue blocking glasses, or I would cut off about an hour screens completely, an hour or two before bed. I don't always do that because I have to sometimes work late, and I understand people out there will have to do the same. You know, I have a business, you guys either have your own business or whatever you're doing. You sometimes have to work late, or sometimes you just want to stay up late and watch TV and chill out. It's completely fine. But if you have really good quality blue blocking glasses, it's going to stop that stimulating blue light coming in. And then number three would be to journal. Now, journaling is a very, very simple concept. It's an absolute game changer for a lot of people. So many people go to bed filled with stress and filled with worry. Sorry if you can hear that as a motorbike just gone past. Right. they go to bed filled with stress, filled with worry, waking up, overthinking, and they don't like to take ownership of that and actually write stuff down. Now, it may sound almost stupid because it's so simple, but the brain likes to manifest stories and visions and things that haven't even become reality yet, just to keep you safe or put you in a better position. So you'll tell yourself things, you'll think, what if that happens? What if this happens? What if that doesn't happen? If you write this down and break it down into concepts that you can control and things you can't control, and set a date for when you can deal with these things, or what, set a plan for what you can do, an hour or two before bed, you're going to feel a lot calmer because you then have a clear and concise vision that the mind will actually see and go, right, now I don't need to tell myself a story to form reality. This is reality because I am in control, or I'm not in control of these things. So that's going to, you're going to lie in bed at night going, okay, now I can deal with that in the morning, or I can deal with that next week. Or when I wake up in the morning, I have to do this, rather than thinking about certain things that might or might not happen.
That's brilliant because, and that's totally, I guess, totally different to what a lot of people think when it'd be like, you know, some of the advice that we give out, you know, blackout blinds, eye masks, earplugs, hot shower, blue lights off for 1 hour before. I think that's about it. Is there any But yeah, going from a complete mindset stuff, because that's what keeps people busy sometimes, isn't it? You know, we've all been there. We've had like stressful times. You're just like, oh, I can't stop thinking about this. And then it's an hour gone. It's 2 hours gone. But it's like, ugh, I might as well get up. Or, you get a couple of hours of really crap quality sleep. And I suppose just going back to what you're saying, then you're riding that roller coaster. So when we see people's food diaries and there's like 4, 5, 6 cups of coffee on there, like, what's going on here? Because it's either food that's missing or it's sleep that's missing, and you're riding that roller coaster. So yes, it's addressing those. Any supplements or anything? Because I've experimented, that sounds a bit dubious, like we're talking about psychedelics, but zinc and magnesium, so ZMA. I found I had really bizarre dreams, which kind of made me feel like I was in a deep sleep. And then tryptophan as well, which is, I think, 5-HTP. Is there any kind of evidence or anything like that that can help those, or is it just more placebo?
Yeah, it's always debatable, because ideally we would have, you know, in our ideal world, a perfect diet, and we'd be getting all of these things in good moderation. But yeah, there's definitely some evidence out there around magnesium. I mean, as you know, magnesium affects 300 bodily processes. It's huge. And there's 80% of Americans are deficient in magnesium as well, because they have such a crap diet. Not so much in the UK, but again, our diet over here is not great either. You know, we are slowly going the way of the States, unfortunately, our cousins across the pond. But magnesium is a debatable topic, because there's so many different types of magnesium. The ones I would recommend personally, and obviously I'm not a medical doctor, so please, before you go on this, advice is gospel, please consult your doctor. But in my experience and my own personal work with clients, I found magnesium citrate and magnesium threonate to work really well.
Right.
Now, there are glycinate as well, and I can't remember the other one, unless you know what it is, James.
I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, I think there's 4 to 5 different types, guys, but there's 3 that I've had experience with. But citrate and threonate are the ones that can help sleep. The science behind it is magnesium in those capacities is found in the blood-brain barrier of the head, obviously. So that allows the brainwave activity to just kind of be balanced and not just be erratic and all over the place when we're in kind of delta, beta and alpha states of sleep. That's really, really in-depth neuroscience stuff, but magnesium can also make you feel a bit more relaxed, because it's found predominantly in the muscles. So if you have tension, if you're stressed, magnesium can help you with that. L-tryptophan is what I use, as opposed to 5-HTP, which is 5-hydroxytryptophan. I use L-tryptophan. That's predominantly found as well in protein foods, such as turkey, tuna, chicken. And it's actually a precursor to serotonin and melatonin. So without tryptophan there, because the body can't produce that amino acid, serotonin production for relaxation and melatonin production might be hampered. So if we're eating a high-carb diet and we're deficient in protein, we might need to supplement with that. But of course, if we address the diet first, then that might not need to be the case. One more, tart cherry juice can be really good as well. There's some science in that. Chaps called Sean Stevenson from the Model Health Show in America, Matthew Walker, Andrew Huberman, they have spoken about tart cherry juice. It's really good. It can help with melatonin production as opposed to a supplement, and it's natural. Just makes you get good forms of it. It's that and kiwi fruit are probably the nature's best foods for melatonin. But again, if you have a good diet, your body's going to be in a state where it can produce melatonin anyway. So please consider that first, guys, before you just go and raid a local pharmacy somewhere or a supplement store. But yeah, the ones you mentioned, James, are great. It just has to be tailored to the individual first.
I remember reading something a long time ago that was talking about L-tryptophan. It was saying, because it's an amino acid, it was saying that's the reason why people fall asleep after their Christmas dinner, because they've had so much turkey, right. I was like, I think it's probably more all the beers and the volume of food than just the fact TV and some turkey that's done it. The Christmas excitement. But, you know, if you sleep well on Christmas Day, it could be down to the amount of turkey that you've consumed.
Yeah, I'll
say, mate. Yeah. Yeah, some really interesting points there. So I think I was reading something recently where he said, like, if you supplement melatonin, which some people do for sleep, because obviously that's what helps you nod off, will that affect your body's own ability to produce it? As in, like, your body will go, I've got loads here, I don't need to start producing any, in a similar way that it would do with, like, anabolic steroids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the same principle. I mean, I used an analogy with my client the other day. It was a coach who was talking about one of their clients who was thinking about supplement with melatonin. And I said, just tell them this, if you got them on nutrition and suddenly their fridge starts producing food out the back of the fridge, you're not going to need to go and buy food from the shop, because you're like, oh, why do I need to go and buy this? And it's the same principle. Your body will go, I'm getting melatonin from an outside source. I don't need to go and produce my own melatonin because it costs me energy and time. So I'm just going to shut down that production in the adrenal gland and the pituitary gland. So it's just going to go, what's the point? And that isn't a pure form of melatonin. It's not your own body's melatonin. So, you know, why are you taking it? You have to, this is the problem I have with society. There's always a quick fix. And there's always a next pill, a next potion, a next supplement, a next shortcut, without looking at the root cause. So if someone has a sleep issue, they'll go, I'll get pills, or I'll get melatonin, or I'll get a supplement. They're overweight, they don't eat well, they have too much caffeine, or they're not overweight, but they just have a really stressful life, and they do have too much caffeine or stimulants. There's no point taking melatonin, because it's just like bringing a knife to a gunfight. You have to exhaust every single resource first and then go, I've done everything I can holistically. I haven't got a psychotic routine, but I've got something that works for me. You know, I feel calm. I feel better. My bedroom environment's good. I'm still not sleeping well. Then we can look at medical advice, or we can look at melatonin, or we can look at other supplements. Guys, please don't just reach for melatonin thinking it will work and hoping it will work, because 9 times out of 10, it won't. And when it doesn't, you're going to have more anxiety and stress around sleep. And that's not where we want to get you.
Yeah. So more looking at the causes of why you're not sleeping well, like you said, if it's caffeine too late, if it's a poor diet, if it's a stress related thing, because, you know, you will get people who take, like I said, you know, alcohol is a good one. But then things like, I suppose, like over the counter stuff like Night Nurse or whatever, or Calms and things like that. Yeah. Is that just a downward spiral for people who need to really address what's going on, as opposed to kind of, I suppose, medicating it, or, you know, like you said, sleeping tablets and things like that? It's just going to give you like a false rest.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same with going to the gym and lifting weights, having loads of protein shakes, but then your diet consists of fast food. You're still not getting that protein is not pure protein. It's a supplement. It's designed to top you up when you already have a good baseline. And this is the same as sleep optimization. You have to have a good baseline initially before you consider supplements. We take you to that baseline, and then we move you forward from there, from a bad place to a good place to a great place. And if then you still want to improve, then you can have supplements. But we have to get you there naturally first. And another thing is sunlight. How much sunlight are you getting in the day? I know it's hard in the UK, especially this time of year, but how much sunlight are you getting? How much time outdoors are you spending? Because even on an overcast day, you're going to get around 8 to 10 times the amount of light you are, even if you're sat indoors. This light above my head now is not going to give me the same amount of light, even on a cloudy day out there. So if I step outside for 20 minutes, I'm going to feel a lot better, and it's going to help my circadian rhythm and my natural energy boost as well. People spend too much time indoors now and don't actually bring any awareness to how many hours they're spending.
So what would you recommend? How much time do you think people should be outdoors? Rough, obviously.
20 to 60 minutes, mate. Right. 20 to 60 minutes every day is enough to aid your sleep. On summer, that's all you need. In winter, probably more, 30 minutes or more is good. You're going to still get a good amount of UV light, UVB rays and UVA rays, plus the pigmentations that you need to, in the morning, to stimulate you and give you energy. Or in the afternoon, if you start feeling tired and it's the summer, step outdoors, get some sunlight, get some vitamin D as well from the sun. Guarantee you'll feel better. There's a reason why our ancestors' circadian rhythm was in sync with the sun, because the sun is a massive, massive driver of cycles on Earth, and especially human beings' energy. Seasonal depression is an all-time high because of darkness. You know, it's 4:05 and it's nearly pitch black out my window now. And don't get that in summer. where people will be depressed and unmotivated because they don't get the daylight. That's how much it affects the human body.
Also, like you said, people moving more to working indoors and just not getting outside. You know, people work from home, you know, during the lockdowns, etc., and even more so now, because people have realized they don't have to go to the office. It's like you wake up, you go to your kitchen, you get your breakfast, you go to your office or your spare bedroom, wherever it is, you do your work, you come downstairs, you have your dinner, you go to bed, that's it. So people aren't getting out and about. And yeah, these are the massive things, but really, really fascinating subjects, mate. You've shared some absolute bombshells. That's me waiting for 90 minutes before my coffee tomorrow. I'm getting out for 20 minutes. But where can people find out more about you? Where can they find, you know, kind of what you do and get in contact if they need to?
Yeah, man. My main area is Instagram and Facebook. So for those of you who want to know my channel, it's at Gary James Allman. So surname is A-L-L-M-A-N. Facebook is Gary J. Allman to distinguish between the two. But yeah, you can check me out on there. Follow my stories, follow my posts. Loads of free content and tips on there for you guys. Or if you want to DM me directly, I'm more than happy to answer any questions you've got, either just off your own back or off the back of this podcast episode.
That has been absolutely fascinating, mate. So thank you very much for joining us today and sharing those knowledge bombs.
No worries, James. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, mate.